everyone. Thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices. I'm John Hernandez. Here's what we're looking at. President Trump is delaying tariffs for another month, but local businesses and consumers are still raising concerns. A program aimed at improving access to fresh foods loses federal funding. What it means for Illinois farmers and food banks.
Becoming and remaining a sanctuary city has been a bit of a mayoral tug of war.
And with sanctuary cities in the spotlight on Capitol Hill this week, a look at how Chicago got the designation and what it means. And now to some of today's top stories. Governor J.B. Pritzker is pushing forward with his plan to ban cell phones from school classrooms. Today, he joined school officials at a high school in Champaign to announce a bill that requires all school districts in Illinois to implement a policy banning the use of phones during classroom instruction hours. Pritzker says the change will create a better learning environment for both teachers and students.
A Pew Research study found that 72% of high school teachers identified cell phone distraction as a major problem in their classroom. Other independent evaluations have shown phones increase harm to social and mental health, foster academic dishonesty.
Champaign is one of the school districts in Illinois that already has a no cell phone policy. And city lawyers are recommending paying a woman assaulted by a Chicago police officer $280,000. Miracle Boyd was an 18-year-old activist during the summer of 2020 when protests erupted across the country, including in Chicago, following the police killing of George Floyd. Boyd was at a protest in Grand Park recording an arrest on her phone when a police officer knocked the phone out of her hand, causing it to strike her face and knock out her teeth. The officer has since resigned. City Council is set to consider settling Boyd's lawsuit next week. Chicago taxpayers have spent at least $7 million to defend and settle lawsuits tied to the 2020 summer protest. And prepare for traffic delays if you are driving through parts of Logan Square. Starting today, the next phase of construction is underway along Milwaukee Avenue, leading to some road closures and reroutes. There will be a permanent closure along Milwaukee Avenue through Logan Square Park. Traffic around the Logan Square Circle will be redirected to the outer lanes, and no parking will be permitted in certain areas, so make sure to keep an eye out. This work is part of the Chicago Department of Transportation's $27 million project to upgrade the infrastructure of the Milwaukee Avenue streetscape and Logan Square Circle. Improvements will include a variety of new upgrades like pedestrian crosswalks, new streetlights, an off-street bike path, and two community spaces. And the winner of the vote to redesign Illinois flag is the existing state flag. A public vote was held as part of a design contest featuring 13 different flag designs, but ultimately the current flag received the most votes. Illinois Secretary of State's office announced today that the existing flag received 385,000 votes, or 43% of the vote. That was larger than the next five designs combined. The results of the online vote are non-binding, but they will prepare a report that the Illinois Flag Commission is scheduled to release to the General Assembly by April 1st. Lawmakers will have the choice to adopt a new flag or keep the old one. Up next, what the tariff whiplash means for you. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
And consumers are bracing for a trade war with America's biggest trading partners. President Donald Trump is pausing 25% taxes on many goods coming from Mexico and Canada again, after just imposing them on Tuesday. He's also moving forward with 20% tariffs on Chinese imports. The abrupt change comes after companies voiced their concerns about costs, the stock market trembled, and the countries responded with their own counter tariffs. Joining us with more are Liliana Fargo, an economics professor at DePaul University, Manny Acala, owner and manager at Acala's Western Wear, a family-owned business in Westtown, and on Zoom is Evan Haltine, vice president of the Illinois Farm Bureau. Thank you all for joining us. Now, this has been a hot topic. There's so much to talk about. So, Liliana, I want to start with you. In a new update today, as we just heard, the Trump administration is delaying tariffs for one more month for Mexico and Canada goods, but still plans to impose a reciprocal tariff starting on April 2nd. Can you tell us what that means?
Well, to be honest, there has been a lot of confusion. This president implemented these policies in an arbitrary way without previous announcement, and he keeps changing the decision. So the latest was a delay, but not a cancellation of the initial tariffs. And he is also planning to impose retaliatory tariffs on other countries. So that certainly creates a lot of uncertainty. And even though it's a delay, it's not a cancellation, and there is no clarity about what will happen after April 2nd.
As you just mentioned, it's a delay, not a cancellation. And this is the second change that Trump has announced in less than 24 hours. The first update gave the car industry a one-month delay for those tariffs. What are your thoughts on these constant back-and-forth changes?
It's very unfortunate that this president is making this decision. It's really creating a lot of uncertainty across the globe. Unfortunately, this violates, to some extent, the free trade agreement that was initially signed in 2020 and reaffirmed by this president in signed originally in 1994, the first trade agreement. Then it was reaffirmed by this same president in 2020. And now he is using a special provision that he argues is related to national security to violate this free trade agreement. Now, the latest is that the cancellation only applies for the products that are in accordance with the latest agreement. So it's not a full cancellation of all tariffs. It's a delay only for those products that are consistent with the agreement of 2020.
So that's why you're saying that it brings some confusion.
Exactly. And this only covers around 30% of the products coming from Mexico and maybe around 15% or so from Canada. So it still remains a lot of impact in the short term.
And Evan, I want to bring you in. Are you concerned that the Trump's trade policies will make things even more challenging for farmers like yourself?
Yeah, I think, uncertainty is the proper term here, right? I mean, farmers face uncertainty every year with weather. We expect some of that, but, we want consistent trade agreements, and Mexico and Canada are our number one and number two trade partners, and so... consistency and certainty in that arena really makes it easier for us as American farmers to navigate an already uncertain business climate, right?
And what would that consistency look like? What are those chats among other farmers? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think, just honoring the current trade agreements we have, looking to build out new trade agreements with new partners. The U.S. is just built to be a great exporter in ag products, but in all products, right? And so utilizing our ability to be a net exporter steers into our ability to be profitable. So just continuing to build upon the work that's already been done to build the USMCA and other trade agreements is really what we're looking for, to have that consistency.
Are you hoping that the administration will provide some type of aid?
Well, I mean, historically, trade agreements tend to hit agriculture and farmers the hardest. And so we hope we wouldn't be forgotten if it gets to that point. But as I said, we want trade and we want markets. We don't want assistance, right? We want to sell the products that we're so good at producing and just continue to build on the work that's been done to get to where we are with these trade agreements.
And Manny, what are your concerns about these tariffs as a small business owner?
Our concerns are really when it comes to the consumers. I think that's one of the biggest impacts that I think throughout the different industries are definitely going to feel. The last thing we ever want to do is have to raise our prices due to the cost of products being more expensive to get over across the border. But unfortunately, with the uncertainty, like things are as they are, navigating through this is, it's going to take some time. But we're excited. Well, we're anxious to see, I guess, where things are headed.
Have you seen some impacts in terms of customers coming in? What does that look like? How would you describe that to people?
Yeah, definitely. I think people are a little bit more cautious with their spending. They're definitely going to figure out what's more important to them. And businesses like ours are a little bit more niche and smaller that rely on these consumers to come are definitely going to feel it, because I think a lot of people are just going to be more cautious about where they're going to spend their dollar.
Would you say you're a bit disappointed on these, on the tariffs?
Yeah, more uncertain more than anything. You know, we're a pretty resilient family. We can definitely push through it, but it definitely caused some kind of concern to us.
How long have you been in the neighborhood?
Gracias a Dios, 53 years.
53 is a long time. So it's a family-run business.
It is. It is. Grandfather started it. My father and his brothers and sisters made it to where we are, and now myself, third generation, and my cousins hopefully take it to the next level, yes.
Wow. Now, I want to mention, in this congressional address Tuesday, Trump reminded us that this isn't the first time he's launched tariffs. Let's take a listen.
The tariffs will go on agricultural product coming into America, and our farmers, starting on April 2nd, it may be a little bit of an adjustment period. We had that before when I made the deal with China, $50 billion of purchases, and I said, just bear with me, and they did. They did probably have to bear with me again, and this will be even better.
Evan, do you think farmers can bear with him for a second time?
Well, you know, I think the real question is how long, you know, do we have to bear the brunt of trade issues? You know, the uncertainty can maybe be bared for a short time, but, you know, as I said earlier, it's just, you know, we spend so much time and effort as a country, as an industry, building out these trade relationships. And, you know, I mean, 40% of our corn goes to Mexico. We've taken a lot of time and effort by a lot of people to get us to this point to have that export market. And so, you know, we just really want and hope that the president will honor the terms of the USMCA, stick to a fair and level playing field when it comes to trade relations, and offer us as American farmers the opportunity to sell our products that we're so good at producing in a global community.
There's a big partnership there, Liliana. Someone who used to work for the Department of Commerce in Mexico, you know, the Trump administration is also saying that companies should just move manufacturing out of countries to America to avoid paying the tariff. How realistic is that for companies to do?
Well, it's very unrealistic if you are just giving them 1 month to adjust. And again, there is a lot of uncertainty in that area. But, you know, I just wanted to highlight, there are a couple of graphs that I wanted to show that highlights also the magnitude of this impact. And I don't know if they have it there. The Council of Affairs pointed out what Evan mentioned, that Mexico is the first trade partner with the United States, followed by Canada and China. And there is significant trade between these countries. And there is what is called the supply chain effect that goes back to your question. These producers are constantly trading back and forth inputs in order to generate the final output, especially in manufacturing. So these outrageous tariffs will just disrupt that supply chain.
And like Evan mentioned, it's taken time to build that partnership.
Exactly. And it will create a lot of disruption in that supply chain as well. It's not just about moving a particular physical plant. It's about restructuring the entire supply chain, and that will take at least a couple of years.
And Manny, your business sources, much of it's leather from Mexico. You know, why not just buy American?
You know, when it comes to quality goods, I think we expect them to come from here in the U.S., but also they do come from Mexico as well. And a lot of manufacturers do get their products from Mexico, and I think that they're definitely going to feel it. We always just, you know, shop locally, support your small businesses, and definitely whatever it takes to get this economy going.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you all for your input.
I think it's very important to highlight the magnitude of impact for domestic consumers. You know, a tariff, like you mentioned, is a tax, and there are some estimates that indicate that average families will be impacted in the range of 1,000 to up to 2,000 initially per family per year in extra cost. And it could be significantly higher if we consider the supply chain effect. And then just for an average car, auto industry also is going to be significantly affected. You could expect to pay around $3,000 and up to $6,000 extra for a family car.
There's a really big impact there.
Right.
I'm going to have to leave it at there, Liliana. Sure. Thank you very much
for
all of your input. Coming up, how Chicago became a sanctuary city and what exactly that means, we explain next. Cities are under pressure from the Trump administration. Mayor Brennan Johnson defended Chicago's history of protecting undocumented immigrants before a congressional committee in D.C. on Wednesday. It comes as the Trump administration and Republicans in Congress are trying to strip sanctuary cities of all federal funding. In tonight's WTTW News Explained series, we explore how Chicago became a sanctuary city and what it means.
For four decades, Chicago has held the designation of a sanctuary city. But what does it mean, and how has Chicago's status endured? The term sanctuary city refers to any jurisdiction that discourages, limits, or denies cooperation with federal immigration authorities. There are currently hundreds of sanctuary communities in America and 13 sanctuary states. Where do they come from? While Berkeley, California claimed the title of first sanctuary city in 1971, the sanctuary city movement really began popping up across the country in the mid-1980s. As President Reagan focused on identifying and deporting undocumented immigrants, churches opened their doors to provide shelter and resources for Central Americans fleeing civil war and violence. In Chicago, becoming and remaining a sanctuary city has been a bit of a mayoral tug of war. Mayor Harold Washington first declared Chicago a sanctuary city in 1985 via executive order. The order prohibited police and city employees from questioning residents about their immigration status and terminated cooperation with federal immigration authorities. Some argued the policy shielded convicted criminals from deportation. And in the 1990s, Mayor Richard M. Daley interpreted the policy to allow city officials to provide immigration information to the feds if the subjects were involved in serious crimes. Chicago's sanctuary policies went from executive order to a strong law with the 2006 Welcoming City Ordinance. In 2012, Mayor Rahm Emanuel and the City Council weakened the law, allowing police to work with federal officials in limited cases. Upon election in 2016, President Donald Trump threatened sanctuary cities with the loss of federal dollars. Nevertheless, the Chicago City Council voted to reaffirm the ordinance. Under Mayor Lori Lightfoot, an expanded welcoming ordinance closed the loopholes opened by Daley and Emanuel, banning all police cooperation with federal immigration authorities. As Chicago enters its 40th year as a sanctuary city, Mayor Brandon Johnson has reaffirmed Chicago's commitment. And today, thousands of refugees and undocumented immigrants have found a safe haven in Chicago, a point of pride for those who believe offering sanctuary is a matter of human rights, and a point of consternation for those who see it as a hurdle for law enforcement.
And you can find the rest of our WTTW News Explained series on our website. And up next, the Trump administration ends reimbursements for Illinois food programs, what that means for local farmers and food banks. We'll be right back. local program aimed at improving food access is in jeopardy as the Trump administration cuts off federal support. The latest cuts ends reimbursements to the local food purchase assistance program from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Farmers and food banks across Illinois now face uncertainty as planting season approaches. Joining us is Capital News Illinois State House reporter Ben Selensky. Thank you for joining us, Ben. Let's get straight to it. Can you just explain how the local food purchase assistance program works and who is it aimed at supporting?
Yeah, people probably know this program more commonly known as Illinois Eats. And basically, this is a program for both farmers and people who are in need of food, people who struggle to find food, especially healthy food. So this program essentially provides reimbursements to the state of Illinois to cover a grant program for Illinois farmers to provide fresh food and vegetables to Illinois food banks and other places where people can access food. The real kicker with this program is it's designed to help people who have a hard time finding food. They may not have a grocery store that's readily available to them, and some of their best food options just aren't the most healthy options. So this is a program that really supports Illinois farmers in providing fresh food, and then it also supports people who are hungry and in need of food.
So, Ben, are we talking about food banks, like food pantries?
Yes. So this goes to food pantries. It goes to really any place that distributes food to communities across Illinois. So these are places where people go in, they're in need of food. The grocery store could be an unaffordable option for them. It may not be a healthy option for them. And sometimes they struggle to find healthy options at these sort of places. And this was a way that the federal government and the state of Illinois agreed it's going to be a good way to ensure that fresh food gets into those locations.
And has the U.S. Department of Agriculture given any explanation for this decision?
No, the state just found out about this earlier this week, that this program is basically being ended on the federal level. The federal government is not going to reimburse the state for any costs that have incurred since Donald Trump took over as president. So the state's actually on the hook for $18 million that the federal government owed the state for reimbursements as part of covering this program. I didn't receive any response from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The state got no explanation when they were told this program is ending. Illinois farmers got no explanation. So we're really unsure exactly what happened here.
Have you been able to get some feedback on, you know, some of the people who work at these food pantries? You know, what are they telling you?
Yeah, the farmer I spoke to down in Kankakee County, she told me that she's really concerned mostly about the people who depend on this program as a source of food. You know, she said that, you know, as a farmer, she feels like she'll be okay with her business being able to continue selling food. But she's really worried about the people in Pembroke Township, where she's located, which I think a lot of viewers probably know is one of the more poor communities in Kankakee County. And she said there's no grocery store there. Many residents are on food stamps. And the food that comes through this program and goes to locations that distribute food in Illinois is really critical for a lot of people who participate in the Illinois Eats program. And she's most worried that they're going to have a hard time accessing the fresh food that comes directly from her farm and goes to these locations because there's no grocery store or other place that actually provides fresh food in that community.
Have state officials responded to this?
Yeah, the governor, as he's been with virtually the majority of Donald Trump's policies, is very upset about this program. He said that this is essentially just another slap in the face that the Trump administration has taken against poor people. Other state officials who head up the Department of Human Services and the Department of Agriculture lamented how this program is very important for both the farmers and consumers, and that this is really taking away a vital human service that the Department of Agriculture has been reimbursing the state of Illinois for. So there's a lot of frustration. I think one of the things we're going to be watching for going forward is, does the Pritzker administration plan to engage in any more lawsuits against the Trump administration? Because there are reimbursements that the state of Illinois submitted to the federal government, and now they're not going to get them. So there could be a legal argument here that the state is owed this money, and this program needs to be seen through its fulfillment that the state and federal government have already agreed to.
And Ben, talking about moving forward, do these cuts mean that the program has officially ended?
Yeah, the hope really from folks who I've talked to who are part of this program, they hope that this is a pause because we have seen so many changes to the Trump administration's policies. Things have been paused or they've said they're going to do things and then they've changed their mind about what exactly they're going to do. So there's hope that eventually this program may be brought back. But right now, for all purposes in the state of Illinois, the state can't really carry out this program because they're not getting the funding from the federal government to actually cover the program. So therefore, the state's not going to be putting forward more costs on their end for this program. So right now, it's what people hope is pause, but it's unclear how long that pause will last. It could last for a very long time.
We're going to have to wait and see. Well, thank you, Ben, for breaking that down for us.
Absolutely.
And that's our show for this Thursday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the weekend review. Now, before we go, a note of congratulations. What do Studs Terkel, Coco Taylor, and Roger Ebert have in common? They're all recipients of the University Club of Chicago's prestigious Culture Award. Now, tonight's WTTW's own Jeffrey Bear joins that group. Jeffrey is receiving the honor for his many contributions to Chicago's culture and historical landscape through his work on programs showing off the city's beautiful neighborhoods and history. The University Club calls Jeffrey Mr. Chicago, and we sure know him for that. We call him our friend and colleague. Jeffrey, congratulations. Now, from all of us here in Chicago tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.